Johnny Mack with your daily comedy news. Jimmy Fallon was excited that the FDA authorized the first at-home COVID test that can also detect the flu. Fallon said, "That's amazing. Now you can be kind of unsure if you have everything. The accuracy of an at-home test is somewhere between seeing a doctor and searching WebMD. Good news is we have the test right in time for flu season, mid-May. Here's how it works. You do a swab at home, then you send it to a lab, then you get the results a week later after you've infected everyone you know. It's really genius." I hope you watched the Carlin documentary last night. Part 2 airs tonight on HBO at 8 o'clock. Vanity Fair spoke to Judd Apatow. Now, Part 2 tonight is really focused on the later period of George. I have become fascinated with very late period George. If you listen to yesterday's podcast, I had my interview with Kelly Carlin, where I apologized to the Carlin clan because at the time of George's late in life releases, I thought he sounded very angry. You'll hear people in the documentary say that. You'll see that come up in the article here. But as time has gone on, I have found George Carlin to be the great prophet of the 21st century. He may not have put out what we wanted, but I think he put out what we needed. Judd Apatow, talking to Vanity Fair, who write, "American Dream puts a human face on a comedy icon who in later years was put in another box, the angry old man. But like Howard Beale from Network, Carlin was not about to leave his audience alone," Apatow said. "As the years progressed, he was way darker. There were people asking if he was going too far. I always thought, this is some of the greatest stuff I've ever heard. I couldn't enjoy it more. It blew me away. He just kept getting more passionate as he got older. I think he felt like people were so asleep at the wheel that they almost needed to be berated. He was so negative at times, it would almost kick you out of the pipeline back into the light where you think to yourself, I don't want to give up. I want things to be better." Robert Klein agrees. "Towards the end, George was a little nihilistic. The last time I saw in person was when we did something for Seinfeld for one of his specials. We were sitting in a graveyard and I asked him if he believed a lot of that bitterness and he said slightly tongue in cheek, yeah, of course. I didn't believe it. He was a sweet guy." Apatow said, "A lot of comedians do their best work in midlife and later in life because it takes a long time to figure out who you are and how you want to express that. The fascinating part about George Carlin is he was always examining his stage persona and adjusting it for the times. He made big changes in how he presented himself on stage. And yes, if you saw part one of the doc and again in part two, you will see those changes." Apatow said, "It's almost ridiculous how often Carlin trends on Twitter. Every time something happens in the culture, people share his routines. He has the best, funniest, most insightful takes on almost every subject." I'll jump in here. Carlin's been dead for 14 years. Apatow, "He has the best, funniest, most insightful takes on almost every subject. He has the best abortion bit, the best bit about money and politics, the best bit about religion. Most comedians, their material ages very badly. He seems to get more popular because the work is so deep and has shown itself to be timeless and important." When Apatow pursued a career in stand-up, he ranked Carlin with Rodney Dangerfield and Steve Martin as the legends we admired as kids. "We would go to the clubs at night and Jerry would be there, Ellen would be there. But George Carlin was connected to a previous legendary generation. Bumping into him was Mount Rushmore suddenly coming to life." This documentary is so good. Please watch it. From Newsweek, Bill Burr has lashed out at critics of Scientology for giving the religion more crap than it deserves. Bill did this on his Monday morning podcast saying, "Scientology, I don't know, am I out of my mind? I feel like it gets more crap than it deserves." He then asked his audience what they would do if you found out I secretly joined, and then he laughed. "Nah, I think it gets more S than it deserves. You know, for as effed up as they say it is, for as culty as it is, I got one question. Where are the bodies? Where are they?" Newsweek says Burr went on to compare the alleged transgressions of Scientology and the history of the Catholic Church in which Burr was raised. "As a former Catholic, I mean, we got bodies stacked up. We got pedophilia, we got torture, we have crusades. What do they got? Little mind control? Couple of disgruntled sitcom stars?" Burr also compared critics of Scientology to those who are trashing Russia for launching its invasion on Ukraine without considering unrelated military actions taken by other powerful nations. Where are we going with this, Bill? Bill said, I don't see it. It's like people trashing Russia. Can you believe they invaded that country? Yeah, that's what powerful countries do. Haven't you noticed that? Don't you see a similarity in what they're doing and possibly maybe another country that you might know a little better might have done? I'm not condoning any of that, by the way. From Collider, Pete Davidson and Naomi Scott will star in a new comedy called Wizards. The film is about two pothead bartenders who run into trouble after discovering some stolen loot. That's all we know about that one. From Deadline, Stephen Colbert's cartoon Tuning Out the News is moving to Comedy Central. It had been on Paramount Plus. It'll still air there, but you'll see it on Comedy Central now. Also, I forgot, they're making a new season of Inside Amy Schumer. That will air on Paramount Plus. That will get a second window on Comedy Central. Scott Aukerman has announced a tour for the Comedy Bang Bang show. Paul F. Tompkins will be there. This won't get me any friends, but in all my years, especially at SiriusXM, when I used to go to a lot of comedy festivals and a decent amount of comedy shows, the only show ever that my staff and I walked out of because we were not entertained was Scott Aukerman's. It just wasn't good. This was in Chicago. If Scott hears this, your Chicago show 10, 15 years ago wasn't good. Sorry, bro. I come in peace, but I speak truth. I also seem to have slipped into a little Mitch Hedberg delivery there for a second. All right. Matt Bronger says the best jokes come to you when you're not trying to write. I remember driving around with Kyle Kinane in 2003, 2004 in L.A., and a Doors song came on the radio. I just started bellowing and making fun of Jim Morrison. Kyle cracked up, and that's how my bit Doors Whopper was born. That is a good bit. Look it up on the YouTubes. And Bronger says the best compliments are when somebody says, we watch your specials X amount of times. I'm like, more than once? Why? But when people do, it blows me away. James Acaster said he's got a music project coming up. He told metro.co.uk, if I'm honest, what I'm most excited for career-wise is music projects I've done during lockdown. I have a record label for them now, and it's going to be released next year, and I'm really excited about that. It's been really fun. I don't sing on it. I want to point that out to people. But there's over 40 musicians who've been involved in the project. It's one of the things I'm most proud of that I've ever done. Donnell Rawlings spoke to St. Louis Today. He's got a new Netflix special coming up, but he reshot some of it. He said it just wasn't making sense. It was going to feel stale. I had to regroup, redo, take the COVID stuff out. He doesn't know what he'll do with the original film show. Possibly you'll never see it. Possibly you will. And he was asked about comedy security. He said, that's nothing new to comedy. Earlier in my career, I had incidents like what happened to Dave Chappelle, but it wasn't deranged people. It was from people I heckled. He has no plans to increase his own security. The incident doesn't change me, just like cancel culture doesn't change me, but it does put me on notice. If you like what I do here, you can buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/dailycomedynews. Suggested amount, $5. You put $5 in the virtual tip jar there. I convert that into real money. Then I get in my car and I drive into town and I go to the National Donuts chain and I buy a large iced coffee with caramel and milk. Then I bring it down to the studio and I shake it on mic. And that's the bit. And that bit costs you $5. Thank you for the support. Buymeacoffee.com/dailycomedynews. Chortle was checking out the BBC Comedy Festival. Going to deep dive here on British comedy. If that's not your thing, you are dismissed. This was a comedy industry gig. Chortle reminds us that that can be tough work for comedians, given such audiences are notoriously unresponsive. That's me. I've talked about this. I call it the Emperor of Rome syndrome. When I worked at SiriusXM, I listened to comedy radio all day, every day, for a decade. It numbs your brain. So what you'll see a lot of comedians do is they'll hang out in the back of the club and they'll be like, oh, good joke, good callback. Yeah, the writing is there, but they don't actually laugh. I often do that too. So if you have industry at your show, we might be all sitting there going, oh, this is awesome, but not actually laughing the way a normal crowd would do. It's good that Chortle pointed that out. These gigs were at the Stand in Newcastle. Carl Hutchinson did an animated delivery of universal material from the cheeky, likable end of the blokish spectrum. Drinking stories are a staple, including a particularly heavy session from which he does not emerge well. All told, with an easy, engaging charm. All right, that sounds nice. Sam Serrano, even more lively, with an excitable camp manner that manages to be superior and self-depreciating all the time. That proves an appealing mix in a set that whips through identity issues, such as Serrano's gender fluidity and how it's perceived, to Kabuki syndrome, the autism-like condition that they have. Anna Thomas is the current BBC New Comedy Champ. Let's see what Anna has. Chortle says she was worthy of the title with a distinctive and appealing scatty routine with her talkative manner, cockeyed logic, and defiant adherence to it. She has the appealing air of not quite being of this world. All right. Nicola Mantelios, in the guise of Zoe, an even more eccentric outsider with limited social skills, but so zealously passionate about her absurd obsessions that she can't stop herself from sharing them with the audience, she had the room spellbound. And in the gales of laughter with her loving description of curtain ties, Zoe's a full-form character, simultaneously naive and intense, complete with nervous, guttural Chortle that must have impressed the BBC bods. Interesting. Don't worry, Chortle didn't just fawn. Listen to this. More straightforward, pedestrian even, is Souk Ajla. With stories of dating in her 40s, she says, I'm single by choice, not mine. Turtle adds, that's an old line that speaks to the air of familiarity around the set, Donald with sex jokes and culminating in some bad teenage poetry. She has an engaging style, but the setups are long-winded and not much of the routine sticks in the mind. Not good. In contrast, Louise Young is popping with attitude, proudly working class, more of a storyteller than a gag merchant. A shorter slot only gives a glimpse of what she might be capable of, but she imposes her personality and witty view of the world in which she shares. Jessica Fostacue reacts to everyday outrages with a rasping incredulity. She's bitingly disparaging of anything that doesn't come up to her scratch. No, there's no her there. I'm leaving that in because I don't even know what her scratch means. I think I know. Oops, leave it in, Johnny Mac. She's bitingly disparaging of anything that doesn't come up to scratch. And the audience laugh both at her frustrations and her reaction to them. All right, moving on. Raul Coley displayed a powerhouse hectoring delivery. It's something of a cover for what can be quite simplistic material, but effective. Next up, Spring Day. Given her dark material, some of about her mild cerebral palsy, Spring Day might not immediately appear to be the perfect performer to open a show, but her honesty and her warm and relaxed stage presence makes the audience lose any sense of unease they might have over the subject matter. Sakisa is another formidable performer, taking apart penis pics, dating, and the life in the UK test that she's encountered in her job as an immigration lawyer. Lauren Pattison is a strong storyteller, even if she overuses some rhetorical tricks, making the occasional yarn unworthy of the investment that her compelling style guarantees the audience put in. That's rough. Mamoun Elagab is a bit of a slow burner, as if the film of his routine is playing on 0.75x speed. Even if his setups could be a lot sharper, he slowly draws his audience into his world. He's Sudanese and has Asperger's, but does not want to be defined by his identity. Nonetheless, he subtly deploys them when he needs to give an extra bite to his sarcastic punchlines. Scene stealer Leo Reich is the poster boy comedian for the TikTok generation. Gloriously shallow, he's big on attitude, vague on details. It's all delivered with a thrilling vibrancy that marks him out as an exciting talent. All right. And finally, Tim Renkow. As a stand-up, his act is perfectly summed up by his opening line, I make people feel uncomfortable. I know I do. I do it on purpose. And that's your comedy news for today. Steve Bennett reviewed all these folks at the Newcastle Stand. Nice job, Steve Bennett. That's your comedy news for today. Follow this show for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your shows. See you tomorrow.